Welcome to the TCC Connection. I'm your host, Anna Fomeister. On this episode, I have a special guest, Trent Gleason. So Trent, welcome to the podcast.
Happy to be here.
So on this episode, we will discuss your study abroad trip to Japan along his interest in Japanese culture, talking about his experience along with touching different elements of Japanese culture. So Trent, what drew you to Japanese culture?
It's a very good question. So while I was studying at Tulsa Community College, I was mainly focusing on English studies, you know, creative writing, literature, composition, the such. But I needed to take an elective class. Oh. And as you know, language studies are a commonly chosen elective. And you know, among the options available, I thought, hey, Japanese seems interesting. I'll admit there was some nerdy interest there. Like, I like video games a lot, and a lot of great games come out of Japan. I had watched some anime, and I was like, hey, you know, but between all of the options, Japanese seemed like the most fun. And I had a buddy who was interested in doing it with me. So I was like, hey, this could be a fun little thing, you know, whatever. So I take it, and I end up like taking it really seriously and like passing the class with an A and like really walking away from that like semester being like, hey, this is like an actual thing that I like maybe want to do like long term. So from there, you know, my interest has continued to develop naturally, whether that be me, you know, watching more anime or even just like doing more research and having conversations with my teacher or like seeking out community events. Like one thing I did was that the Circle Cinema hosted like a documentary night.
Wow.
Where it was like some Tulsa filmmakers had made a like documentary about Japanese musicians. I can't remember if it was like they were in Oklahoma or something, but it was some deal. And so I went out of my way to go to that. And like my Japanese teacher was there like unexpectedly. And it was this whole thing. And I was just like, oh, okay. But anyway, so like around that time, like I realized that, hey, you know, with me looking at finishing my associate's degree here in the next year or so at TCC. Anyway, so yeah, like I saw a window of opportunity for me to go to Japan with me looking at finishing my associate's degree within the next year or so. So I was like, hey, yeah, I'll start saving money. I'll, you know, start doing research about what kind of stuff I'd want to do on there, where I want to go. And all of it just kind of fell into place. And kind of what I was looking at that trip as like, it was an experiment, right? It was like, okay, if I spend 3 months in Japan and I study abroad and I really like challenge myself, it'll like inform me of whether or not this is something I actually want to do, or if it's just like a fleet of fancy, if it's just like I'm still in the honeymoon phase and it's not something I actually want to go through. You know, I figure, hey, 3 months is enough time for me to really get a taste of like the true challenge of studying Japanese, and also like whether or not I even really want to, whether or not I'm really seriously interested in this country. It just kind of felt like a natural next step if I were to take this seriously, and I did it, and I had the experiences I had, and I'm sure you'll ask me more questions about that. So
what programs did you associate with to go on the study abroad trip to Japan?
It was very independent. I didn't like seek out any specific programs. So kind of my connection was that like my folks work in a church here in Owosso, Oklahoma. And we had a missionary come by who like had been planning to go to Japan, and I had met him and his family a couple of years prior to my developing interest, and I was like, hey, like I could reach out to him and like ask him for advice, because I knew that he was going to a language school and stuff like that. So basically like I used that connection as kind of my way in, and I kind of wrapped it up into like me kind of being able to get a little bit of like church support and stuff like that, because it's like a valuable like thing for to send somebody from a church to like build a relationship with a missionary, regardless of like whether or not there'd be any real like church type activities, which there really weren't. Like I just spent time with them and hung out, and it was a great time, and it helped me get a little extra support. But yeah, so like through that connection, I became aware of the language school that I ended up going to. So that was, you know, what that basically looked like was me reaching out to the language school, sending emails, you know, like, hey, I'm a student who's interested in doing a short-term study abroad trip, you know, and basically it would be like, you know, figuring out what time I would be coming, like what months I'd be coming, how to pay for my apartment stuff, you know, all this type stuff. And it was an interesting back and forth. I wouldn't say it was the easiest thing in the world, but I did do it. So
during your stay, how long was your trip there?
So I left Oklahoma. I left Tulsa. I believe it was like July 1st, if not like June 31st. So basically like by July 2nd, I was like in Japan.
Okay.
And I left Japan, I'm pretty sure September 27th, and returned in Tulsa September 28th. So okay. It was like a 3-month deal.
Okay, cool. And then where did you visit in Japan? Like, do you visit like small towns or like multiple cities or something like that?
So where I lived, it was Sakado, Saitama. Saitama is a prefecture. A prefecture is basically like a state in Japan. Okay. And the Saitama prefecture is the prefecture that is directly west of Tokyo. So from where I was, I can get on a train and in 40 minutes be in Tokyo. So what that meant was that basically where I was functions sort of like a suburb of Tokyo. You know, so a lot of people that work in like Tokyo would live in that area, you know, cheaper housing, all that stuff. And, you know, and then you have a relatively short commute. So what that meant was that I had kind of the smaller town feel where I lived. Mm-hmm. And I could even just kind of like stay in that area and like walk past the train station and be in the rural countryside. And then, so I had that taste, right? I had that access, but the second I got on the train, I could go anywhere, which meant that I had access to the big cities and stuff like that too. So for me, it was kind of like the perfect place because, you know, something I wanted, I didn't really want like a tourist type experience. I really wanted to like feel what it meant to like live in the shoes of a Japanese person, like really experience that daily life in mm-hmm. the most organic way possible. So I am happy that I kind of got a taste of, you know, rural living, suburban living, and city living. You know, it was all at my fingertips. So it really was.
Like yeah, experience of both sides. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Right.
And then what were there any holidays to celebrate during your 3 months of stay?
I attended a couple like fireworks festivals, and that's kind of tied to like their summer type experiences.
Didn't they know like what was like what did they celebrate?
Man, I need to do more research on that, but it's always some kind of like holiday or something going on. I can't really distinctly remember like any specific holidays that I like actively engaged in. But I know that like they're pretty commonly like festivals and stuff being held for whatever reason, because you know it could just be like a small little thing is enough to warrant a street parade or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I was there for anything super huge. Or my memory is just blanking because boy, did I experience a lot in 3 months and some of it is fading away.
What was something that you find is different when hanging out in Japan versus here in Tulsa?
So let's just boil it down to like American culture and Japanese culture. There's definitely a different way to speak to somebody
okay.
in Japan than in America or Western culture in general. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to provide some level of context, you know, I wasn't hanging out with a ton of Japanese people. Most of the like Japanese people that I spent time with were like the teachers and the faculty of the language school. Mm-hmm. Pretty much all of my classmates were either Chinese or Vietnamese. So I didn't talk to them a bunch because they didn't speak very good English and they also didn't speak very good Japanese. So it was very difficult to communicate with them. There were a couple that I spent time with, specifically like one upperclassman, Chinese girl who wanted to like hang out with me to learn English, and I wanted to hang out with her to learn Japanese, and also because she was very attractive. So, but I got a little taste of like a different culture there because I'd be joking around and being goofy, and she'd be like, "You need to take this more seriously," and I'm like, "Okay." And also, she would like get on to me if I were using a lot of like digital tools for studying, and she's like, "No, you need pen and paper." It's like very traditional, right? So you kind of experience like a slightly different slice of culture. But in terms of a more specific Japanese example, they are very mindful of like where you stand in a hierarchical like ladder. Mm-hmm. So like if you're talking to someone who's theoretically like above you, you have to shift your language and your tone to like lower yourself to them, right? And the opposite is true. Like if you're talking to someone who is an underclassman, you can speak with more authority and be more assertive and all this. So there was a specific example where I was talking to one of my teachers about the American guy, the missionary guy, you know, because we're like friends. So like I was talking about him like behind his back as like a friend would, saying like, yeah, you know, there's some things he does I just don't like that much. And he could be a little bit of a doom and gloom type guy or whatever. And my teacher is like, wow, I can't believe you're so openly criticizing your elder. And I was like, huh? He's like, he's just my buddy. What are you talking about? You know, in America, it's like, well, yeah, of course, we're just going to speak our mind, you know, just lambast people like for whatever reason. But in Japan, it's like, no, you must be mindful of someone having authority over you or being better than you, and you must be respectful. And I do like respect that. And I think that's like a good thing. You know, I think America would be improved by maybe being a little more courteous and respectful of people, maybe not on such a strict hierarchical standard, but just in general.
So Japan is well known for anime, a style of media. Is there any type you find yourself interested in?
Yes. Specifically for me, kind of a like genre of anime and manga and whatever, because like manga is Japanese comics and a lot of anime comes directly from those Japanese comics, the same way that like a lot of our movies come from our books, you know.
Okay.
It's an adaptation type cycle. But there is a genre of manga, a genre of anime called shonen, and that's the Japanese word for like a young boy or whatever. So basically it's media, it's entertainment that's specifically designed for a younger male audience, although like people of all ages and all genders read it, you know. It's just that it provides a specific experience, and that experience is often one where the main character is like an underdog and he really wants to become like the best at something. And what you'll find in those stories is like very uplifting, very positive, like a very positive story of someone like literally like working as hard as a human can possibly work to achieve like their goal. And when you're reading a story like that or watching a story like that, it just is very uplifting. So I watch one show that is very popular here in the West called My Hero Academia.
Mm-hmm.
That's My Hero Academia. Most people would know it. Yeah. But I watch that with my siblings. And it's one of those things where my younger sister tells me that she'll rewatch the show and it'll make her want to work out because it's just like pure raw energy. And that's something that I just think is very unique in that kind of show and that kind of experience that the West maybe doesn't have as much. I mean, we do have our superhero media, but I don't think, you know, in that media, you don't necessarily get such a raw, like straightforward kind of emotional experience the same way that you get from like a shonen anime experience.
How is Japan and sushi in Japan different from the US? Like how sushi. Yes, ramen and sushi in Japan different from the US. Yeah.
So I'll admit I only had like actual ramen one time while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my ramen eating experiences have been in Tulsa at a Roppongi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people that go to TCC specifically at the Metro campus might know Roppongi, it's on that street. Very good. Well, my takeaway from that experience, just the one time that I had ramen in Japan, was like, yep, it tastes like the ramen I had when I was in Tulsa, and it's cheaper, you know? So that was great. But at the same time, I was like, yeah, I mean, look, like, I don't know. Like, of all the food that I could experience in Japan, like, ramen isn't the most exciting. I did eat a lot of, like, cup noodle, which is, like, kind of their leading, like, cheap, you know, ramen brand. So like I'd buy these little styrofoam cups basically that have the ramen stuff in them, and I just pour boiling water in there. It was like a buck, you know. It's like if I need like 300 calories to help me survive when I have no money, which was a very frequent occurrence, I got a cup noodle. On the sushi side of things, I did eat a lot more sushi than ramen. There was specifically a kind of chain sushi place at this outlet mall that was like 10 minutes away from me, and I'd go there a lot. And the cool thing about that was basically, so you get seated at like kind of a bar type thing or like a booth, whatever, and basically you have like a touch screen like an iPad. Mm-hmm. And which has the menu on it, and basically I can order as much food as I want for as long as I want. It's just that like every roll or whatever, roll being like two to three pieces of sushi or whatever, okay, costs like a buck. So basically, I'd be like, okay, I want like a roll of salmon sushi or whatever. So I just tap the little thing, and there's a little like conveyor belt in front of me, and it would just zip out in like a minute. And I'd eat that, and I'd be like, yeah, I could do for another. So I'll get another. Just tap the button on there, I'll come out. So usually what I do is I go in there with like a $6 budget, and I'm just like it's kind of piecemeal, like just keep bringing things out. And of course there was more than sushi. If I wanted like a little basket of French fries for $2, I could do that. If I wanted an alcoholic beverage, I could do that. If I wanted like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And that was very cool, you know, in terms of like the quality of the sushi, like it was good. I wouldn't call myself a sushi expert. I don't know that I could compare it to the experiences that I had in America. I will say that like in America, you're going to see a lot more like deep fried, like unhealthy crap, naturally. Yeah. And that's usually what I end up eating in America. It's not what I ate in Japan. If you want like flavor, probably the best you're going to, like, you know, in terms of like comfort food type stuff, the best you're going to get is like a seared piece of raw fish instead of just a plain old raw fish on your sushi. And it was good. The most premium sushi experience I had, I went to Enoshima, which is like this fancy touristy island type spot, I think kind of south of Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
Really great place. But we went to this like super high-end like sushi establishment, and the whole like conceit was that, you know, all of the sushi, all of the fish involved in the sushi had been caught like that day, like as fresh as possible, like, you know. So I didn't pay for it, so I can't tell you how much it was. If I had to guess, it was probably like $20.
Okay.
For my little plate. It was very good, but again, it's like I'm just not knowledgeable enough about the sushi experience to really explain to you why it was as fancy as it was. All I can tell you is that yep, it was fresh, you know.
So how are you maintaining your Japanese language skills during COVID?
So for the longest time, I've been using a service called iTalki. Mm-hmm. It's a little like app I downloaded on my phone. And basically what that is like a free market for tutors. So I go on there and I'm like, hey, I want to find a Japanese tutor at a certain price, at a certain level of experience. And on this app, I can see like all these different tutors that have signed up on the service to like take students. So I found one lady who was doing lessons for like $11 an hour. Obviously, you know, native, fully fluent in Japanese, but also had like just enough English experience where like if I were in a total, you know, bind, I could ask questions in English. But also I wanted to make sure that I found someone who wasn't like fluent in English.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to avoid like using that as a crutch. You know, mm-hmm. I wanted it to be a situation where if I really wanted to fully communicate with this person, I needed to use Japanese. I couldn't rely on English. So I found someone that was exactly to that level of criteria that I had. And it was amazing. You're noticing I'm using past tense here, but I studied with them for probably like 5 months, mm-hmm. from pretty early on, like when COVID all kind of took hold of America and all that, until probably like August-ish. The main reason it stopped is that she needed to do like some type of physical therapy rehab type stuff because like she had injured her knee or something. But for the longest time, I had been doing that like at least once a week, usually multiple times a week. It was mostly like conversation practice, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just like chatting. She had a little Google Docs thing opened and she would like take notes so I could study that and all that. Sometimes she'd give me homework and all that. But anyway, so that was like a very affordable thing for me to do post study abroad trip, right? Yeah. And it was great, you know. It really, honestly, like I improved a lot just over that like chunk of time when I was studying with her, because you'd be surprised, like just conversing with somebody, like conversing with a native alone, like is enough really to like, you know, if you have the foundation, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have the language foundation, and all you have left, right, is to grow and to improve, you know. And my listening comprehension was good enough where I could, you know, hear everything she was telling me, and if I heard something I didn't understand, I could specifically pinpoint that and ask, hey, what is this? You know, that's like all the tools you need to like function in a conversation. Is like,
yeah.
can I at least understand the basics of what you're trying to tell me, and then do I have the ability to pinpoint what I don't understand and ask you what that is? You're gonna kill it, right? Like, yeah. You've already made it so far where like growing is really going to come pretty naturally. There's always going to be like the challenging grammar type stuff, you know, and we studied stuff like that during our lessons together. But I think that's a really satisfying like place to be when you're studying a foreign language, is that, you know, once you've established kind of the base skills, the base understanding, the foundation is what I call it, like, it's just, you're just a sponge. You're just soaking up stuff constantly.
Right, right.
And, you know, my study abroad trip established a lot of listening comprehension, and also established a lot of confidence, because as I was having daily opportunities to speak Japanese and to hear Japanese, it just makes you a lot more comfortable, like, trying, even if you're going to mess up,
mm-hmm.
right? Because that's the thing. I talked to a lot of people that studied, like, Spanish or something. And they'd be like, yeah, you know, I studied in college for 4 years or whatever, but I have no confidence. I have no idea how to speak it. And it's like, look, it's like, you just need to speak it. It's like, don't be afraid of messing up. Like
you need to immerse yourself in the culture.
Mm-hmm. No, totally. Yeah. And ideally you want to be talking to somebody who's going to tell you whenever you mess up, because, mm-hmm. you know, you don't want to be stuck in like bad habits and stuff like that. But I definitely recommend that to people to people that are studying foreign language. You know, even if they haven't yet made it out to the country that they're interested in, like doing a service like italki, and that's spelled like lowercase I, the word talk, and then a lowercase I, you know,
mm-hmm.
Very cool service. You know, you don't have to worry about like throwing down a bunch of money all at once, or like signing a contract or something. It's just like, hey, you know, whenever you want to do it, just pay whatever rate per hour that you think is good for you. So
what lessons or takeaway did you have that you would like to bring back to the US?
You know, a lot of that like cultural type stuff in terms of like functioning as a society, right? Like I think probably the clearest culture shock that I had was like in Japan, everyone has this like ever-present sense of courtesy and all this stuff, like being very conscious of like how your actions affect other people. Am I making someone uncomfortable right now? Am I being selfish, you know,
mm-hmm.
Or whatever. And that's something that I've always kind of like tried to be that way with people, even before I was interested in Japanese culture and Japan in general. So it was cool to go to a country where like my ideals are just kind of shared by everyone. You know, and obviously there's always going to be the outliers, right? But the general norm, right? The societal expectation is that people are being very mindful of everyone around them. And what that looks like, you know, I think like the best example is like on the train, for example. Like if you're on the train, you know, don't speak very loudly, if at all. Don't answer a phone call. You know, if you had to be standing up, like not, if you're on a really busy train and there's no room for you to sit down, and you have a backpack or something, it's best for you to put the backpack in front of you so you're not hitting people like unknowingly with your backpack or stuff like that. It's also good like not to use wired headphones on a really busy train, because that can get caught on people, and I've had that happen to me before. You know, and just like stuff like that, like what can you do to make somebody as comfortable as possible and not like interrupt their day, right? Or mm-hmm. be a burden. So I mean, that's cool. Another like interesting example is like don't stare at people.
Yeah.
Which like, you know, I can't tell you if people are staring at me, because I wasn't looking at them. Like pretty early on, like I like trained my brain to just look ahead, to just like everyone just melts away. They all become shadows around me. I'm just focused on where I'm going. I'm focused on the scenery, my surroundings. I did hardly any people watching, you know, which is, you know, in America I feel like it's more like expected that like, oh yeah, you know, we pretend like we're not looking at people, but ultimately everyone's like looking at everybody.
Yeah.
We're all just judging each other, you know. And you know, that can be fun in a weird way, like getting a little taste of other people's lives or whatever. But ultimately, like I do think it's kind of cool, and also it really relieves a lot of tension on yourself if you're not looking at other people, like you're not having to worry about whatever, you know. And people don't have to worry about whatever, you know, because you're just minding your own business. So that was a cool thing, and I do find myself like doing that more in America than I used to, although I have fallen back slightly into the people watching tendency. It's just, you know, since there isn't that like societal expectation, it's easier to like just fall back into old habits. But, yeah. But yeah, no, I honestly just think the biggest thing is like that whole being conscientious, being courteous,
right.
Thing. It just kind of enhanced that. And you know, I think in America, we could really benefit from people being more, you know, empathetic towards each other's experiences, you know, with everything that's happened this year, in between, you know, George Floyd, the BLM stuff, you know, even just COVID in general, how people have handled that situation in terms of like whether or not they want to wear a mask or not, or follow certain health guidelines. I mean, so much of people's like, you know, opinions on that are so self-centered, you know, it's like, oh, well, I don't want to wear a mask because it makes me uncomfortable. Or, oh, I don't want to follow these health guidelines because it's not a threat to me, I'm young or whatever. You know, it's all, you know, they're basing all of their experiences and their opinions on their own experience without being mindful of like how their actions affect other people. And, you know, I don't want to like say that like Japan is like so much better than we are, you know, that they haven't had any issues with COVID, because they have. But ultimately, I do think that you've seen them like bounce back a lot faster than we have. Like, people are still working somehow, right? They went back to work pretty quickly. Like, and you could also say that's a problem, right? Because there's this whole like work culture thing in Japan that is a problem. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be quick to like say that's a super great thing that they did, but also it does sort of reflect like just a difference in the kind of state of their society that, you know, there's enough trust and also enough responsibility embellished in the Japanese people already. That's like, yeah, I mean, we already had it understood that if we're sick or something, we wear a mask. Like, that's just a thing that we already do, right? Mm-hmm. so yeah, there's a lot of things that Japan does that I think America could learn from. I'll just leave it at that.
Which one, anything else you would like to add in general?
I think, you know, I obviously experienced a whole lot, you know, a lot of my experiences in Japan weren't even like directly related to learning the language. It was just like being a minority, like being in a different place, you know, challenging yourself to interact with different people, you know, challenging myself to like go out on my own, you know, potentially like be completely by myself, be completely isolated. You know, there's a lot of challenges in my trip. You know, there's times where I wanted to go to a neighborhood festival, but I was worried about walking in as the only white guy or whatever, you know? And those are really like humbling and, you know, great experiences to have as any person, right? Like going into adulthood, just like to learn and understand like what it feels like, right? To be like a minority, you know? And after everything that's happened this year with, you know, Black Lives Matter and all that, it's like walking away from that with the experiences I've had, like being like a person that would only very rarely see white people like in my area, like it wasn't like super traumatic. I wasn't having cops like chasing me or whatever, but it was just enough, right, of an experience in me to like, I can now have some level of understanding, right, of what it feels like to not be like the majority. And so there's that, right? And then there's also just the experience of doing something independently. It builds a lot of maturity and responsibility. And also, I mean, just expanding your cultural understanding, you know, you're getting a taste of how the world functions outside of America or wherever you may be, you know, just really helps you be able to process information that is unfamiliar to you. You know, it expands your brain and your potential for receiving new information and, right, you know, all this stuff. It's just a great challenge for anyone to do, I think. And it's a risky thing, you know, especially when you're not doing it through a program or something. I think it really is a great, like, thing to go through, you know, for your own personal development. So I'd recommend anyone that has the ability to do it, which I know that's not very many people. I am very fortunate and very grateful that I got the opportunity. You know, I saved a lot of money over the course of like a whole year. And yes, I did get a decent amount of support too, but it was a lot of hard work on my part, you know, of like, I wasn't buying any $60 shoes, I can assure you that. It was like a lot of
penny pinching. You want a budget.
Exactly. Yes. So no, I just think it's a great thing to do, and for anyone, regardless of how old you are, how young you are, whatever. Like, if you have the opportunity, whether through a program or independently, I'd say, you know, definitely pursue it.
Well, thank you for joining me today. Appreciate it. Again, guest Trent Gleason, and I'm your host, Anna Fomeister at the TCC Connection. To discover us more, visit our website, tccconnection.com. And to follow us on social media, you can follow us through Instagram and Facebook. Again, thanks for watching and tune in for a future more episode. Thanks.